Okay, I think we can start the session. I welcome all of you for Wednesday Sutta teaching session. So we are discussing several suttas in this session, particularly to get some guidance to our practice. And as a result, we have discussed Sabbasava Sutta, which is actually dealing with the inner traits, taints in our mind. That is actually a very useful subject. And now we are discussing Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. That is also one of the interesting suttas where Buddha is teaching to Venerable Pukkusati, who was a king and now he has become a monk and quite interested in Buddha's teaching. And even though he has never seen the Buddha, he ordained on behalf of Buddha, going forth on behalf of Buddha, and then in between to the city of Shravasti, he met Buddha, but he didn't recognize Buddha, and anyway allowed Buddha to preach. Now Buddha very beautifully get the consent from Venerable Pukkusati to preach some Dhamma, and as a result now Buddha is teaching this wonderful sutta what we now have in Majjhima Nikaya, called Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. So in this sutta, Buddha is giving various definitions to the so-called person, so-called individual, and therefore Buddha comes up with several definitions, like this person consists of six elements, this person, so-called person, has six bases of contact, and another explanation is this is nothing but 18 kinds of mental exploration. And now we are discussing has four foundations. Now under number one, this person consists of six elements. So typically we know four elements, that is earth element, water element, fire element and air element. And on top of that, Buddha has given another two elements. Those are the space element and consciousness element. And six bases of contact. So based on the sense faculties, eye meets with the forms, sights. Then ear meets with sounds. Nose meets with smells. Tongue meets with tastes. Then body meets with tactile sensations. And the mind meets with mind objects. So as a result, so we can analyze this so-called person, a being, as six bases of contact. Actually, by giving these kind of explanations, Buddha is somewhat simplify the whole exploration. Otherwise, it is quite difficult to understand this whole experience. So our whole experience, we can include, simplify to this one of these explanations. As a result, we can do various contemplations so that to understand ourselves. All of these are within ourselves, nothing external. So therefore, this is entirely a vipassana approach where Buddha is teaching Venerable Pukkusati, because Venerable Pukkusati already accomplished in the samatha side, because he got the samatha techniques through his friend King Bimbisara, when he was informing about the Buddha Dhamma Sangha to his friend Pukkusati, the King Pukkusati. So at that time, some amount of meditation practice was included in that message. So as a result, Venerable Pukkusati has able to gain practice on samatha insight or samatha concentrations, various concentration practices, because he himself is a fairly accomplished person if we consider his past lives. Now once he met Buddha, Buddha understood now Venerable Pukkusati already gained certain amount of concentration. Now he is turning his attention towards the vipassana. So all these explanations, therefore, arousing lot of wisdom, inviting us to ponder into these approaches in order to understand so-called person. So we typically think there is a person, there is I, there is me, there is you, there is another person, and we give various names. We give various titles. So as a result, we get up, coming up with languages and communications, and ultimately we consider all these conventional norms as the reality, as the truth. But now Buddha is taking us back to the original nature, to our fundamentals, and asking us to look at that fundamentals, to explore those fundamentals, to think in line with those fundamentals, so that we are able to recognize any kind of entanglements that we have created, and so that we can simplify our mind, so that we can clean our mind. And that is the sort of approach Buddha has taken in this sutta. Now, has four foundations, so that is another very beautiful explanation Buddha is giving. Actually, this is with respect to a practitioner. So these four foundations are not common to other people who are not into the practice, but very much to a practitioner who is striving towards the realization of Four Noble Truths or the Buddha's teaching. Now, these four foundations are different from the typical four foundations of mindfulness, four satipatthana, because we can say the four satipatthanas are really included in these four foundations, but these four foundations are more broad. Now we are dealing with those four foundations. We already discussed the foundation of wisdom. So there again, Buddha is teaching the so-called person is six elements, and the space element, the earth element he is explaining, water element he explains, and then the fire element, air element, space element, and ultimately the consciousness element. So the consciousness element is explained with respect to its function. One of the function of consciousness element is the recognition of various feeling tones. When there is happy feeling, we can distinctly recognize this as a happy feeling. When there is a painful feeling, we can distinctly recognize this as a painful feeling. And again, when there is an equanimous feeling, we can recognize that as well. So this is one of the fundamental function of the mind or the consciousness. So with respect to that, Buddha is teaching fair amount of Vedana Anupassana to Venerable Pukkusati, and again giving him some insight about the causes of the feelings, that is the contact, Passapaccaya Vedana. So very much like giving some sort of essence of Buddha's teaching, touching the cause and effect relationship, and touching various explanations with respect to the elements. And now, actually last time we discussed what is the foundation of truth. That is where we encounter the peace or the Nibbana, where Buddha is telling that is the only truth. Whatever else is so impermanent, so subject to some kind of transient nature, and therefore it is unsatisfactory, and there is no essence, there is no core, there is no self. So any of those conditioned phenomena, therefore we can't accept as true, because at the next moment it becomes something else, something otherwise. So therefore, at any time, if we have to accept something is true, it has to be true forever. And it has to be true for me, and it has to be true for someone else as well. It is not kind of a partial truth, but it's a kind of a universal truth. So in that respect, Buddha is teaching the nature of the Nibbana. So he is emphasizing that typically the worldlings, including the devas, are considering this so-called person as a self, as a person, as an individual, and they think there is a self there, as a soul there. And whatever appear in the mind, they consider as true. So name and form, that is the sort of, we can say, the image appearing in the mind. So we give some emphasis to it, we give some value to it, we give some names to that, and as a result, we accept it as a reality, accept it as a truth, and we indulge in it. And as a result, there's a kind of a vicious cycle come into form in between the consciousness and name and form, vijnana and namarupa. So there's a kind of a vicious cycle, interdependency between consciousness and name and form. So that actually taking us long path in this samsara. Now Buddha is asking us to sort of wake up to this reality. Actually, that is not immediately possible because we have so much of defilement. So we have to do fair amount of practice based on the wisdom experience in this previous foundation, so that our mind become clearer and clearer. So we would be then able to understand what Buddha is teaching here. So in a way, this sutta is somewhat deep and needs fair amount of practice if we are to really understand it experientially. But at least we can have some idea about what Buddha is trying to tell here, teach us. And as a result, even in the future, if we are able to practice, we can have some insights and we can compare our own insights with these Buddha's teachings. Now, today I like to discuss about the foundation of relinquishment, and this is the third foundation Buddha is teaching us. First foundation is the foundation of wisdom, and there Buddha emphasized telling that don't neglect it, don't delay in developing it. So be heedful to develop the wisdom. And next, the foundation of truth. There Buddha asks us to preserve the truth. When you are able to encounter the truth in your mind, even for temporary time, safeguard it, try to enhance it, try to give some value to it. And therefore you got to preserve the truth. So this is one interesting aspect with respect to the truth, because we as practitioners, we might have encountered this truth, but unfortunately we have never given value to it because it doesn't promote any self, it doesn't promote any individual, it doesn't promote any conceit. So therefore we simply ignore it, we simply think it is not a valuable thing, it is not something important, it is not something considerable, it is not something that we need to preserve, to cultivate. So we simply ignore it. So, but we have to have some faith on Buddha and the Dhamma and the Kalyanamittas, and as a result, when we time to time encounter this kind of experience, while we are engaged in practice, we have to recognize it. Otherwise, we simply again and again miss the point. So that is very crucial. We may spend years in our practice neglecting this truth because we don't know it is so valuable. We don't know that it is the path, that is the next entry point to our practice. So we simply go on various other paths, ignoring this real path, ignoring the correct path. So that is something unfortunate happened to the practitioners, because they don't give value to this real path, because it doesn't emphasize any person, it doesn't emphasize any individuality, it doesn't emphasize any conceit. So we typically give value to something which emphasizes self, someone who praise our person, personality, individuality. So then we give some value, but unlikely. The so-called truth, so-called detachment, so-called unassociated state of the mind, relaxed state of the mind, unattached state of the mind, never promote any person, never promote a self, never promote conceit, but it's a very humble, very down-to-earth, very simple, very clear, in a way little boring sort of a state. So it doesn't excite our mind, it doesn't agitate our mind. So it's a kind of a nature of peace is there. So we have to recognize that peace, we have to recognize that spaciousness, that freedom, that simplicity. And that is why these kind of suttas are quite important for us to have some sort of pre-understanding about our experience. Now, when it comes to this relinquishment, that is the third truth. So there Buddha says one should cultivate it. So this relinquishment has to be cultivated. So with respect to that, we'll get into the information given in the sutta. Buddha says, now while we were ignorant, there are so many acquisitions we have undertaken. So say for example, you engage in a kind of a business. So you are becoming a businessman. And you are having so much wealth. You, as much as possible, you are trying your best to acquire as much as possible wealth. You open a bank account, you put a sort of loans and getting a lot of value. And maybe you acquire a lot of lands. Maybe you acquire a lot of houses, another business, whatever it is, as much as possible, mostly as lay people. So you all are actually interested of acquiring things, accumulating things. So actually, we can acquire things in many, many different ways. Say for example, if we consider through our education, say when we start as a young child, we go to the kindergarten and then suppose to the school, and then we become a kind of a student, and as a result we are learning something, and sometimes we become the first in the class, second in the class, so we are given prizes, so we get kind of an individuality. And then we get on to some, say, ordinary level exams, advanced level exams, university level, and suppose we get a degree. So they are also helping us to make a self, making an individual, a degree holder, a graduate. And suppose now you are getting to a job. So there you are given a title. Okay, you are a doctor, you are an engineer, you are a lawyer, you are a teacher, you are a government servant, whatever it is. So you are given given various titles. As a result, we put that thought in our head, in our on ourselves, and we recognize ourselves with respect to that title. And there are very many honorific titles maybe, and there are various other skills that also help us to make a self. Say for example, you are good in singing, you can be a singer, and you like that and you value that, and you consider that you are a good singer, you have a good voice. And suppose you are good in mathematics and you are becoming a mathematician. Suppose you are good in sports, you become a good cricketer, a sportsman. So likewise, various skills. Suppose you are a good runner, then you can have a career based on that. As a result, you recognize yourself with respect to that. When you consider yourself, so you always keep all these value judgments on top of yourself, and with respect to those several indicators, you define yourself. I am so and so. I have these many education titles, these many degrees, this much of education, this much of knowledge, this much of skills, and these are the certificates. So we are putting so much information, so much details to our biodata, our curriculum, and so we are developing a self, we are making an individual, and we give so much emphasis to this individual, and we sometimes look down the others while admiring ourselves. And even the opposite can happen. We may even hate ourselves while admiring another people. So that is the opposite. But even there, we create a self. And we can even be someone who is really, notorious. So even that we can use to identify ourselves. I am a burglar or whoever it is. So you can even recognize onto the negative aspect of our life. There also we create a person. There also we create an individual. And say even health, if one is really healthy, then that also can be used to make a self. And again, suppose based on the family status, social status, say if you are belonging to a kind of a dignified family, so you have some family background, your father, mother, grandfather, grandmother, so you are coming with a good generation. So with respect to that, you prepare kind of a conceit, prepare kind of a proudness. And again, social status. Okay, I am a high class person, I am a say high caste person, so others are on the lower caste. So likewise, based on the caste system, one can again prepare a self, prepare an individual. And again, the family members, suppose your father is a kind of a respectable person, so you yourself have some dignity, some kind of a respect because of your father, because of your mother. And on the other hand, suppose your children, they are skilled in certain activities, and as a result, you as a parent, you recognize yourself, you give some value to yourself. So all these actually prepare a self. All these actually prepare a kind of an identification, and again, we are using our own identification number, or in US, the social security number. So all these actually help us to make a self, make an identity, make an individual, and that is what we consider as unique. So when we are go to an interview, when you are go to a sort of say kind of a meeting, suppose you want to go enter to some high secure area, so they all want to check our identity. So there we show our identity, we show our driving license, our SSN. So all these make ourself, all these make an individual. So wherever we go, we carry all these titles. Now suppose you are coming from US to Sri Lanka. So but you recognize yourself, I am a US citizen, I am so and so, I have this much of wealth, I have so many degrees, I have so much of associations, I have these spent some time in these locations, this was my education. So likewise, we carry all these titles, all these acquisitions in our mind. So much so, we are not free, because we are very much like burdened, because we have to carry so much. So all these titles, all these designations, identifications, make us fair amount of burden to our mind, because we are carrying everything. Now, are we ready to give up all these? Are we ready to leave aside all these? So this is not easy. Now, even as a meditator, you can make a self. Suppose you are a good practitioner. You are able to get onto various jhanas. So you can be a first jhana. You can be in the second jhana, in third jhana, fourth jhana. So you can say, okay, I am able to be in the fourth jhana. The other people couldn't do it. So you create a self out of that jhana. Suppose you even can do immaterial jhana, arupa jhana. And you simply even look down the other people who have the material jhana, rupa jhana. On the other hand, suppose you are a vipassana practitioner. You can say others are simply doing samatha practice. I am the vipassana practitioner. So you can have a self out of your practice. So all these actually give us some self-view to ourselves, unless we handle it properly. Unless we carefully understand these identifications, what we do in our mind. So this is where this foundation of relinquishment is so important. It is not easy to give up all these identifications unless we clearly see how much stress, how much suffering we create because of these acquisitions. Now, there in Dvaitanupassana Sutta, which is available in Suttanipata, Buddha says very beautifully, Upadinidana Pabhavanti Dukkha Yekechi Loka Misa Lokami Santena Aneka Rupa Yove Avidva Upadin Karoti Punapunang Dukkang Upeti Mandu. So, simple meaning is, sufferings in their many forms in the world originates based on acquisition. The ignorant fool who creates acquisition encounters suffering again and again. Now this is very direct sort of hint Buddha is giving here. So we typically think all these acquisitions are very important, very critical. So I have to have so much of acquisitions. Based on that, I consider myself as so important, so wealthy, so valuable. I am a very important person. I am a VIP. So we acquire as much as possible. But the bad side is we create a big self. We create a big individual. So difficult to forget. So difficult to come back to the earth. We live in a different world. And that actually helps to travel in this samsara again and again. Reborn in this samsara again and again. Tasma pajanam upading na kaira dukkassa jati pabhava anupassi. So if one can understand this very clearly, then one stop making so much acquisitions. They may have their essentials, not going for too much, not going for excess, but rather the most essential fundamental things are there to live, and even that one is using with proper contemplation, understanding the use of it, understanding the purpose of it, not in a kind of a competition, not in order to look down others, but to merely understanding the benefit. So in this Dvaitanupassana Sutta, therefore Buddha says, Upadinidana Pabhavanti Dukkha, all these acquisitions are making suffering, makes us to suffer. But this is entirely opposite to the typical norm. Now in our typical economic terms, so we acquire as much as possible. We want to have a lot of wealth. We want to have a high salary. We want to have a good title, good designation, good job. So all these are acquisitions. But if we are not handling them properly, all these acquisitions will really become a burden to us. Will really become a hindrance to ourselves. And another point that I like to highlight here, that there's another beautiful sutta called Sakkara Sutta. We are coming in the Udana Pali. So this is a beautiful incident happened during the Buddha's time. You know, there are many ascetics apart from the Buddha and the Sangha. Other ascetics were available at Buddha's time. Say Nikanta, Paribhajaka, so likewise various other sects were there. But with the rising of Buddha and the Sangha, so all these other ascetics lost their status. Now people are not much respectful to them. So instead, many people diverted towards the Buddha and the Sangha. So they started to recognize Buddha and the Sangha, to support Buddha and the Sangha. Therefore, so much support which were previously gained by those other ascetics become less and less. So they become really envious about the Buddha and the Sangha. They were quite jealous about them. So they want to get revenge. They want to chase them away. So as a result, what happened was, at one time, the Sangha was going on Pindapatha, village Pindapatha. At that time, these other ascetics, so they paid some value to certain drunkards, and now they are using various bad words, rough words, to abuse the Sangha. So they are, while the Sangha is going on Pindapatha, so these other drunkards and the other ascetics are using really bad words and abusing. Now, so the members of the Sangha become really hurt, and they come and complain the Buddha. Bhante, we went on the Pindapatha, but we went through a lot of difficulties. People, whoever the donators, they also being criticized, and we ourselves were criticized and blamed, and therefore we leave this city and go to a different place. So this is something members of the Sangha come and request from the Buddha. At that time, Buddha didn't agree to leave this city. Rather, Buddha using this incident to give a very profound teaching to the Sangha. So what he tell here is this. Game aranye sukadukka putto nevattato no parato dahet. Pusanti passa upading paticca nirupadin kena puseyu passa. So Buddha says, when affected by pleasure and pain in the village and forest, one should not ascribe them to oneself or another. Contacts affect one dependent on acquisitions. How can contacts affect one without acquisitions? Now this is something we can ponder, we can really reflect upon, because when someone is blaming us, when someone is looking down us, when someone is hinting us, why we really get hurt? So it's something that we can think actually. Suppose you are working with someone and you are holding a higher position, and subordinate of you is now neglecting your orders. Simply say he is performing as he likes, not obeying your orders. And is it going to hurt you? Why? Now this is something we can look. Probably we are making a self, we are making a kind of a designation, and now another person is ignoring it, and as a result we get hurt. So this title, this designation, this status has created an acquisition in ourselves. We have recognized according to that, we have identified ourselves with respect to that. When someone is hinting it, when someone is ignoring it, we get hurt. Suppose you are, on the other hand, you are a child. Now someone, your mother, your father, another teacher may blame you. Sometimes we really get hurt, we start to cry, because our mother, our father, our teacher didn't give us due respect. They didn't accept ourselves, they didn't accept our demand. So they didn't accept our status. So whatever it is, we can give as an excuse. And why it is happening? Because we have make a self, we have made a self with respect to these acquisitions. So therefore Buddha is very deeply telling us here, when you are dealing with various day-to-day activities, you may have to be in the forest, we have to be in a village, in a small city, and you can even go to a city, go to a town, and I mean you may have to deal with other people in any of these places, and there the other people start to chat with you, have to have a talk with you, a discussion with you, a dialogue with you, and there are all these criticisms or praises can happen. Now at that time, if you really become hurt, if you really become upset, so at that time Buddha is telling, don't consider as it as kind of an individual, take it personal, don't take it personally. So Buddha is telling us not to consider they are I am and another person, I and you. So if we make this distinction, I was hurt by another person, I was blamed by someone else, he blamed me. So there we are sort of putting the phrase, putting the incident in a personal perspective, considering, okay, there is one person, there is another person, that is I, so they criticize me. So that is where we are putting the whole thing in a personal perspective, and Buddha says, so you don't do that. And he is giving a kind of a very insightful preaching here, telling, Pusanti passa upadin paticca. All these contacts do the contact based on the acquisitions, based on the upadhi. If someone is able to relinquish all these upadhis, relinquish all these acquisitions, relinquish all these titles, relinquish all these designations, then how can these contacts go into contact? So this is something we can think. This is a very beautiful logic here Buddha is giving us. So when there are no upadhi, when there are no acquisitions, how these contacts going to attack us in a way? So the level of acquisitions, the amount of acquisitions, probably helping to develop a person, to make an individual, but to that amount, we even might suffer. More we have, more we going to suffer. This is completely opposed to the typical economic, social norms of today's society, where they promote as much as possible acquisitions, as much as possible wealth, as much as possible titles, as much as possible so much other values, norms. But here, Buddha is telling an entirely opposite thing, to relinquish all these. But actually, this doesn't mean that we give up everything and we donate everything to the temple and say, and we become no one and a kind of a beggar. It is not the point. Even while you are having all these, are you able to keep them aside from your mind? Or are you going to every time fill your mind with all these titles? So this is the point that we have to think. You may have a good education, you may have a lot of wealth, you may have a good position, you may have a good designation, you may have a good social status. While keeping them, can you still keep your mind simple? Can you still maintain a kind of a humble life? Can you maintain a simple life? Can you still maintain kind of a humanity, a humility? So this is something we have to think. And again, in our vipassana practice, more and more we have to disclaim all these acquisitions through our mind. So it is not that we give up everything to a monastery, a temple, to a whatever charity, and we become a beggar, we become a no one. But rather, when all these acquisitions are again and again coming to the mind, telling us, okay, you are so and so, you are so important, you are a VIP. So likewise, so are we able to disclaim that? So this is the point. So whenever a thought arising in our mind, telling, okay, you did something really good, so everybody admired it, everybody praised on that, so you are a marvelous, you are a very smart guy. So that kind of thoughts can arise in the mind. At that time, rather than being conceited, can we think that as a merely a thought? Are we able to penetrate that thought rather than making a self, rather than making an identification? Are we able to merely consider it as a thought? So that is the point. So that is why Buddha telling here, so while we were ignorant, we undertook a lot of acquisitions. We acquired a lot of acquisitions. Now he has abandoned them, cut them off at the root, made them like a palm stump, done away with them so that they are no longer subject to future arising. Now, when all these acquisitions are trying to pop up and make a self, make someone, make a person, make an individual in our own mind, then and there we have to disclaim them. Then and there we have to penetrate that thought. Then and there we should avoid getting deluded by that thought. We should avoid making a self out of that thought. We should avoid making a kind of an individual, kind of a self, kind of a person out of that thought. We should penetrate and understand this is a conceited thought. This is a wrong thought. This is kind of a fallacy. This is something that we have to really carefully disclaim and maintain kind of a very clean, very clear, unentangled, very peaceful, unattached kind of a state of mind. So, on the other hand, so if you could remember the previous foundation, that is the foundation of truth. So that foundation of truth is free from all these acquisitions. So when you are maintaining that unattached state in your mind, unassociated state in your mind, that freedom, that free state in your mind, so that free mind doesn't have any acquisition. It is simply empty. It is simply spacious. It is empty of self. It is empty of individuality. It is empty of a person. It is empty of a soul, a self. And it is true because it is the reality, and it is not changing, and it is so profound. And therefore Buddha is using that reality, using that truth, unattached state of mind, as a way of overcoming all these claiming coming out of these acquisitions. So the point is, whenever various thoughts are arising with respect to various acquisitions, we can bend our mind towards the truth, bend our mind towards that unattached state, unassociated state, and use that as a base, as a island, in order to be free from these deluding thoughts. So now the mind again become empty, again become simple, again become spacious, again become humble, and it is free from conceit. It is free from acquisitions. Now, therefore, Buddha is telling, therefore a bhikkhu possessing this relinquishment possesses the supreme foundation of relinquishment. So this is something that we have to cultivate. It is not happening immediately. And you may be a good practitioner, you may be a vipassana practitioner, you may have done many years of practice, but still, if we don't know how to penetrate all these thoughts without making a self, without making an individual, then still we are bound to the samsara. So because we have given so much value to ourselves, so much importance to ourselves, and we might have ignored the others, and we consider kind of individuality, and we have kind of a dichotomy called you and me, or I and you. So that kind of a division is there always in the mind. So till that division is in the mind, so we are not free. So there is something very deep inside that we need to carefully understand. So this kind of relinquishment, Buddha says, is the supreme kind of relinquishment. For this bhikkhu is the supreme noble relinquishment, namely the relinquishing of all acquisitions. So eso hi bhikkhu paramo ariyo chago yadidam sabbupadi patinissaggo. So this is the supreme relinquishment, that is the relinquishment of all acquisitions. So relinquishment of all acquisitions is a synonym for Nibbana. Sabbupadi patinissaggo. Sabbupadi patinissaggo is a synonym for Nibbana. So relinquishment of all acquisitions has to happen if we are to attain complete freedom, complete Nibbana. So has to be fortified by relinquishing all the acquisitions. So this is not something that we can do immediately, but this is a gradual practice. Then and there we have to be vigilant about our mind, guard our mind, and we have to recognize when all these deluded thoughts are arising, when these conceited thoughts are arising. At that very moment, we have to disclaim, it is not me, it is not mine, it is not myself. So whenever these acquisitions are sort of fertilizing a self, promoting a self, promoting an individual, at that very moment, we have to disclaim that thought, telling, this is not me, this is not mine, this is not myself. So, more we do that, we can maintain a clear mind. More we do that, we can maintain a humble mind. More we do that, we can maintain a kind of a humility. We can maintain a simple mind. We can maintain an unattached mind, spacious mind, free from burden. So free from self, a created self. So therefore this is actually kind of a advanced vipassana practice. So may not be immediately possible for a beginner, but the path is leading to this sort of a practice. So more you understand the wisdom, more you understand the reality, so that reality is giving a lot of strength to give up, to relinquish, not to acquire. Now, typical today's mundane knowledge actually help us to create a self, create an individual. Say, for example, you are acquiring a university degree, you are acquiring a kind of a diploma. So all that actually makes a self. All that actually make you are a special person. But on the other hand, the wisdom that Buddha is talking, whenever you develop such wisdom, that wisdom tells you there is no self. There is no individual. It is merely six elements. It is merely, say, six bases of contact. It is merely 18 kinds of mental explorations. It is merely four foundations. So likewise, that proper wisdom actually helps us to do a smooth relinquishment. Rather than making a self, rather than making an individual, rather than making a false self. So therefore this the foundation of wisdom actually helps us a lot to do a smooth relinquishment, because that is reinforcing us, helping us, strengthening us to recognize that there is no self here, there is no essence here, there is no so-called individual here. It is simply, say, five khandhas, six elements. So likewise, a lot of wisdom is promoting this non-self. As a result, this relinquishment of acquisitions becomes smooth, become possible, and become practical. So then, therefore, we can use that wisdom to strengthen this relinquishment, to make it possible, this relinquishment. As a result, we are able to disclaim all these acquisitions and such related thoughts, making it, this is not me, this is not myself, this is not mine. So with that, I like to wind up today's sutta teaching. I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. If anyone has any questions, feel free to submit them anonymously via the chat, or feel free to raise your hand and ask directly. Okay, Bhante, I've received one question.
Yes.
Which is, how do you advise us to enable ourselves to develop or practice relinquishment in our meditation? Is this relinquishment something that arises if we practice the four foundations of mindfulness?
Yeah, true. So it's a very good question. Actually, four foundations of mindfulness, Satipatthana, help us to recognize the foundation of truth. Say, now we have discussed four foundations in this Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. So we encounter this foundation of truth as the second truth, second resolve in this Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. So this is something emphasized again and again in Satipatthana Sutta as a kind of a turning point in our practice. Say, for example, if one is practicing Anapanasati, say one simply starts with being mindful about in-breath, being mindful about out-breath, and then one refine one's practice, understanding whether it is long breath, whether it is short breath. So as a result, mind get more and more refined, concentration also become improved, and later one would be able to see the full breath. So that means your clear comprehension become more and more improved. And there Buddha is turning us to look at the impermanent nature of this so-called breath, or we can precisely tell as the, say, air element or earth element, where whatever it is that at that time predominant. So one is then applying or understanding the impermanent nature. So that impermanent nature helps us to give it up. Now at that time, all the other, say, acquisitions, all the other experience is become secondary, but this breath has become the most predominant, primary, and even that is now become quite impermanent, become so transient. And at that time, once when one is able to recognize that impermanence, the transient nature, it helps us to release it. It helps us to give it up. So assume that once you are able to give it up, if you are not acquiring anything, if you are not attaching to anything else, if you are not going to acquire any other acquisition, then mind become free. Then mind become unassociated. Then mind become non-grasping. You are not grasping anything in the world. So that is the point, that is one of the milestone Buddha again and again emphasize in Satipatthana Sutta. Anissitocha viharati nachakinchi loki upadhyati. So one now starts a new way of life which is endowed with non-attachment, non-grasping, unassociation. So one recognizes that kind of a freedom in the mind. So that freedom in the mind has to be cultivated. So that is the true state. So that is the truth. So that truth has to be cultivated. That truth has to be preserved. And more one is able to preserve that truth, more and more one is able to maintain that unassociated state of mind. So while one is doing it, now again mind go and attach because of our past habit. Now, so the Satipatthana practice helps us to recognize this unassociated state, recognize this freedom, recognize this non-grasping state available in the mind, and then one can use that as a reference. That is our reference, that is our norm, that is our home, that is our island, that is our protected place, safe place. And now we are trying to live there. But unfortunately, all the past acquisitions, all the past memories, future plans come and again disturb us. So those are actually with respect to acquisitions. But when those disturbing happens, now since we are well fortified in this truth, in this peace, in this freedom, in that anicitta state, non-grasping state, so now we can clearly recognize this deluded nature of the acquisitions. When those thoughts are arising, we can clearly recognize, okay, now this thought is sort of tempting me to make a self, tempting me to make an individual. So this is a kind of a deluded thought. This is merely a thought. This kind of a mara, this kind of a delusion. So this is simply a thought, but that thought is promoting a self, where there is no self. So likewise, so we are using the Satipatthana practice as a foundation in order to recognize all these deluded thoughts. So that is what we do in Chittanupassana and again in Dhammanupassana. So while we are in Chittanupassana, suppose you are getting a lustful thought. So you simply recognize this as a lustful thought. And you are penetrating that thought. You are not going after the lustful object or even criticize yourself having that lustful thought. Both actually give a kind of a personal view. You criticize yourself as a person. You criticize or you attach to another person as a person. So both actually promote the self view. On the other hand, if you are able to recognize this is simply a lustful thought, so this is kind of a unique practice. This is kind of a penetrative practice, not promoting any self view, but really give us insight. So this is merely a thought. This is merely a lustful thought. So this is one of the very important point in Satipatthana practice. So whenever a thought arises, you are not getting deluded by the content and attributing it to a self, Rather, you are recognizing thought as a thought. It may be a wholesome thought, it may be an unwholesome thought, still it is a thought. This thought is not you, this thought is not yourself, this thought doesn't belong to you. And you can simply let it go. As a result, your mind becomes free. So therefore, this is the practice that we are using in Satipatthana to properly do this sort of disclaiming of all these thoughts which are actually promoted because of these acquisitions. And as a result, you are able to maintain a mind which is free from various deluded thoughts, and so much so you are all these acquisitions doesn't become a burden. So that's why I have told you that it is not that you are giving up and donating all your wealth, your house, your children, your everything to a monastery or whatever it is, and you become a beggar. That is not the point. Rather, when all that acquisitions are making various claims, proposing various sort of deluded thoughts, at that time, at that very moment, we have to penetrate that thought and we have to disclaim that thought and have to maintain a mind free from any attachment, free from any grasping. So that is the point that we have to promote. So that actually leads us to the understanding of non-self, the anatta, the teaching of anatta. So this is actually possible through vipassana practice, through satipatthana practice, because the satipatthana practice gives us that insight, gives us that clarity of the mind, and helps us to find that foundation of truth, that non-attached based, non-attached foundation. So therefore, it is possible to relinquish all these acquisitions.
Thank you, Bente. The next question is, as a mother, how do we practice this?
Yeah. So as a mother, suppose you have a few children and still you can do your duties. So I am not telling that you have to ignore all these your duties. You do your duties, but are you every time get burdened by your children? Suppose you are going to do something. So every time, suppose your child come into your mind, your daughter come into your mind, your son come into your mind. So sometimes we think this is something that we have to admire. We think that I have so much of mother love, and so we promote that. We admire it as telling this is father's love. But is this mother's love, is this father's love going to make you really happy? Going to make you suffer? Going to make you unsatisfactory? Going to make you sort of uncertain? May create you some amount of uncertainty? Kind of fear? Or kind of a freedom? So you yourself have to think. You yourself have to check your mind. Whenever those thoughts belonging with arising with respect to your children, are they really make yourself burdened? Are they really make yourself unhappy? Are they really make yourself bound to the samsara? Or else, are you able to recognize those thoughts as thoughts? So this point, whenever with respect to your children, when there is a thought arise, rather than you are immediately attributing a self, I am a mother, I am a father, now this is my child, this is my son, this is my daughter, are you able to penetrate that thought as a thought? So that is the point. So therefore, if you are able to recognize at that very moment, this is merely a thought, then you can properly take an action if that thought is proposing sort of a, say, some action to do, or else simply you can understand, okay, this is simply a deluded thought, not necessary at the moment, I can simply leave it aside, I can let it go, and you can maintain a non-grasping mind. But on the other hand, suppose your child is sick, at that time there's a thought coming to your mind, okay, my child is sick, so I have to take him to a doctor. So at that time you still understand this is a thought, but still I have a duty to do right now. So you are taking your child to the doctor, doesn't matter. But on the other hand, once you are taken him to the doctor, suppose again and again another thought is bugging you. At that time you already have done what is the best. But at that time you can simply ignore these thoughts and clearly maintain your mind in a peaceful state. So therefore, it is not that we are trying to escape from our family life or escape from our duties, our responsibilities. Rather, we can properly take action when it is necessary. We can take our part, we can maintain the relationship when it is necessary. We are not sort of react to various thoughts blindly. Rather, we can penetrate the thought, and if it is necessary, we can take the proper action. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. So the next question is, when thoughts or opinions arise in the mind, which would lead to building a self or image using the reflection of not me, not mine, not myself, is this verbalization during meditation? So we need to start our verbalization in an empty state. This type of reflective verbalization actually disturbs the empty state even momentarily.
Sure. Actually, now if you are able to simply recognize it as the thought, then you don't need to go this some rough sort of a practice. Say for example, while you are maintaining your sort of an empty nature of the mind, non-grasping nature of the mind, peaceful state of the mind, suppose there is a mental image arising with respect to your child. Now at that time, if you are able to simply recognize it as a perception, it as a mental image, without attributing it to a person, so that is some kind of a very good insight, kind of a very sensitive mind, very mindful state. So simply you can recognize this is a mental image, simply you ignore it. So there is no verbalization is needed at that time. But on the other hand, suppose you couldn't do that immediately. So as a result, there's a thought arisen. So now there's a kind of a attachment arised in the mind. At that time, even at that time, if you are able to recognize this is a kind of a thought, attributed with some attachment. So this is a kind of a lustful thought, this is a kind of a attachment thought. And at that time you still can penetrate the thought, still you don't need to make such verbalization. Because the internal recognition, you are turning your attention towards that thought and properly seeing it, that very understanding would be sufficient for that to go away. Because that level of mindfulness, refined mindfulness, is so powerful. So as a result, that thought does not come to any kind of a proliferation, any kind of a sort of a rumination. So it will simply go away, fade away. But on the other hand, suppose more and more thoughts are arising. At that time, maybe kind of a verbalization would be useful. At that time, you can use, okay, this series of thoughts doesn't belong to me, it is not mine, it is not myself. So it's a kind of a hard push, kind of a hard blow to this delusion. So you are purposely arousing wisdom in the mind. So as a result, you are able to again free your mind. So therefore, any of these thoughts actually are disturbing to the emptiness, but if you don't take the proper approach, it may even entirely take you out of the emptiness, take you entirely to the conventional level, it take you out of the sort of the peace, and again mind become sort of started to ruminate. So at that time, so if we are able to properly take the correct decision, correct action, then we can simply maintain or protect the emptiness, protect the peace, protect the non-attachment state available in the mind.
Thank you, Bhante. The next question. Logically, what you explained as four foundations in this sutta seems to be out of sequence. Shouldn't wisdom lead to the relinquishment and then to the truth of Nibbana? To me, it looks like that it is wisdom that leads to relinquishment, and it is relinquishment that enables us to attain the truth of Nibbana. Could you please explain why truth of Nibbana comes before relinquishment?
Yeah. Actually, if we think linearly, then we get this question. But on the other hand, the foundation of wisdom, as you said, has to come to the first, because that is where we start the practice. We are sort of reinforcing our mind, strengthening our mind, leaving aside all these wrong views, and sort of strengthening our mind with the right view. So that is the wisdom aspect. True, correct. And at that time, some amount of relinquishment is also there. True. Say you are relinquishing all these falsehood, fallacies, all various other sort of conventional realities. You are relinquishing. True. But on the other hand, you further improve your practice, and again you may come across the foundation of truth, Nibbana. True, that is also possible. And the last foundation is the foundation of peace, maintaining a mind which is free from defilements. So that is another aspect. Actually, all these four foundations, even though in this sutta are sort of put it in a sort of an order, in the practical sense, we have to use them in parallel, not one after the other. In parallel, we have to use them. Say, for example, like I have explained you in the previous question, say you are maintaining kind of a free mind, you are maintaining a spacious mind, you are maintaining an unattached mind. So that is where you are preserving the truth. So the truth, the second truth is there, second foundation is there. Now at the same time, now there's a kind of a say external thought going to arise in the mind. You are seeing someone, you are seeing something, and as a result, kind of a thought going to arise in the mind. So at that time, you are immediately applying, you are improving the wisdom. So again, the foundation of wisdom is coming to the play. Now the order is going to change. Now once the the foundation of wisdom is applied, improved, suppose that intruding thought may disappear. Again, your mind become free. Again, you establish yourself in the foundation of truth. And as a result, again, the mind is free from any defilement. So the foundation of peace, the last one, is established. So therefore, these foundations are helping each other. It is not that we always have to think that we have to practice in order, in a sequential order, and we have to develop this first, then next, then the other one. So likewise, it is not like that, but rather each and every of these foundations are really reinforcing each other, helping each other, and do a kind of a collective task. So that is where Buddha is telling, when one is well established in four foundations. It is not that Buddha is telling that you have to take every one after the other in sequence, but Buddha is telling, when one is well established in all four foundations, all four foundations are necessary. So therefore, take it in that respect, that respect, not thinking as linear.
Thank you, Bente. I believe this is the last question. Being layman or as family man, it is really difficult to practice non-self character without near any acquisition in day-to-day life. Can you kindly help break my thoughts, please, Bente?
Yeah, I think kind of a very pretty, very practical question. So that's what I tell. I don't try to donate everything to Nisannane. We don't need that much. So if you are putting some donation, we welcome, but not everything. You can actually the point is when all your wealth related thoughts are arising, when all your acquisition related thoughts are arising in the mind, why are you always want to promote them? Why are you always going to hold them? Why are you always thinking them as true? Can't you look at them as merely thoughts? So that is the point. So acquisitions are there, doesn't matter. But when these acquisition related thoughts are arising, are you able to recognize those as thoughts? When you are able to look at them objectively, not getting deluded by those thoughts, then if it is a really valuable, really important thought, probably you can take a necessary action, suitable action, doesn't matter. But on the other hand, most of the time, those thoughts are merely useless, are not useful. Suppose you are, say, you have so much of wealth, doesn't matter, fine. But is it necessary to think about that wealth 24 hours in the day? Not necessary. Say if you want to pay a mortgage, at that time you are paying it, that's it. But do you need to think about that mortgage again and again? Why are you burdening your mind? And suppose you have your children and you are doing your duties, you are taking them to your college and you are giving them the proper education. You are giving them enough food facilities, but are you still want to hold them in your mind 24 hours the day, 24 by 7? Not necessary. You can still do some practice, you can maintain a free mind, still maintaining a relationship, still maintaining your family. So that is the point that we need to understand. So one can still lead a happy life, but not getting burdened by acquisitions, not always making a self out of acquisitions, not making a person out of acquisitions. Acquisitions are there, it's a kind of a facility, it's a kind of a help to us to for us to continue our life, that's fine, but it doesn't necessary to make a self. Say for example, say Vishaka. So she had 20 children and very wealthy woman and was a Sotapanna. And then merchant Anathapindika, Sudatta. He also has many children and most of them are stream winners and one of them are Sakadagami. And he himself is a Sotapanna. He's an extremely wealthy person. And again, say Chitta Gruhapati. Another householder, very intelligent person. Even certain monks ask certain questions from this very intelligent householder. He's an anagami, non-returner. And again, say Bandula Mallika. She's a mother of 16 very strong young people. And his husband is a minister in the Kosalan's army, but an anagami. Non-returner. This woman is a non-returner. So likewise, there are enough examples are there in the Buddhist history that many people have practiced according to the Buddha's teaching while maintaining a household life. So I mean, if one is impossible to do that, they can come and become a monk, a nun, and sort of practice to the best of their ability. No harm, no problem. But at the same time, Buddha's teaching is unique, or rather common, to all the four parties, monks, nuns, lay women, lay men. So it's common, it's possible to all the parties. So therefore don't discourage thinking that I am a householder, I have so many responsibilities, I have wife to look after, I have children to look after, I have a job to look after, I have so much duties, so I can't do this practice. So this is not. Rather, when you improve your practice, once you are engaged in practice, you are coming across a state of mind you can maintain, which is free from defilements, which is free from acquisitions, which is free from burdens, which is free from attachments. So that state of mind has to be promoted. That state of mind has to be valued. That state of mind has to be cultivated. So that is the practice.
Thank you, Bhante. That is all of the questions for today.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. And I think most of you are sort of I don't know if it is agitated by this today's sermon or today's sutta teaching, but it's actually an eye-opener for all of us that we are almost every time trying to make a self, always promoting a self, promoting an individual, and promoting conceit based on a lot of acquisitions. But this kind of teaching actually help us to open our eyes, actually help us to promote non-self and see the reality and practice according to the Buddha's teaching. So therefore it's really a good advice to all of us, including myself. So let's practice this foundation of wisdom, this foundation of truth, this foundation of relinquishment of acquisitions, and the foundation of peace, and try to be completely have a free mind and to attain path fruition nibbana. So while having such good thoughts in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses to end up the session. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha cha bhummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha cha bhummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha cha bhummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu mamparam. Idam vo ñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo. Idam vo ñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo. Idam vo ñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo. Imina punya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satang samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Imina punya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.